or at VikingCruises.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to talk about the U.S. crackdown on Cuba. It was announced last week, and it has big implications for people who have family on the island of Cuba. We're going to talk about that in a moment. By the way, thanks to Sean Canan for filling in for me while I was away for a few days. First, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to Joe Biden's announcement for president. He created a short video, and we're going to hear that announcement from time to time as the candidates announce they're running for president. We've been carrying some of their messages. Here is Joe Biden's announcement from earlier today. And we're going to bring this up in just a moment. Here's Joe Biden making his announcement that he is running for president. This came out early this morning.
Charlottesville, Virginia is home to the author of one of the great documents in human history. We know it by heart. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. We've heard it so often, it's almost a cliche, but it's who we are. We haven't always lived up to these ideals. Jefferson himself didn't, but we have never before walked away from them. Charlottesville is also home to a defining moment for this nation in the last few years. It was there on August of 2017 we saw Klansmen and white supremacists and neo-Nazis come out in the open. Their crazed faces, illuminated by torches, veins bulging, and bearing the fangs of racism, chanting the same anti-Semitic bile heard across Europe in the 30s. And they were met by a courageous group of Americans, and a violent clash ensued. And a brave young woman lost her life. And that's when we heard the words of the President of the United States that stunned the world and shocked the conscience of this nation. He said there were, quote, some very fine people on both sides. Very fine people on both sides? With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it. And in that moment, I knew the threat to this nation was unlike any I had ever seen in my lifetime. I wrote at the time that we're in the battle for the soul of this nation. Well, that's even more true today. We are in the battle for the soul of this nation. I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are, and I cannot stand by and watch that happen. The core values of this nation, our standing in the world, our very democracy, everything that has made America America is at stake. That's why today I'm announcing my candidacy for President of the United States. Folks, America's an idea. An idea that's stronger than any army, bigger than any ocean, more powerful than any dictator or tyrant. It gives hope to the most desperate people on earth. It guarantees that everyone is treated with dignity and gives hate no safe harbor. It instills in every person in this country the belief that no matter where you start in life, there's nothing you can't achieve if you work at it. That's what we believe. And above all else, that's what's at stake in this election. We can't forget what happened in Charlottesville. Even more important, we have to remember who we are. This is America.
Former Vice President Joe Biden making his announcement that he's running for president this morning. That's a video he put out this morning touching on right-wing violence. And the topic of right-wing violence comes up today on Midpoint. Shelley Reback and her guests will be talking about the power and memory and the importance of witnessing with her guest from the Gulf Coast Jewish Family Services Holocaust Survivor Program. That's coming up today at 12 noon on the Midpoint program. Well, we're going to talk about something a little bit different today. We're going to talk about Cuba. Last week, the Trump administration intensified its crackdown on Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, rolling back Obama administration policy and announcing new restrictions and sanctions against three countries whose leaders, National Security Advisor John Bolton, dubbed the Three Stooges of Socialism. Bolton said the troika of tyranny, Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, is beginning to crumble. Bolton made a hard-hitting speech in Miami on the 58th anniversary of the U.S. failed Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in an attempt to overthrow the Cuban government. The measures seem likely to hit Cuba hardest, which is at the moment in a severe economic weakness as it struggles to find cash to import basic food and other supplies following a drop in aid from Venezuela and a string of bad years in other key economic sectors on the island. Bolton announced a new cap on the amount of money that families in the U.S. can send their relatives in Cuba. The Obama administration had lifted limits on remittances, but the new limit will be $1,000 per person per quarter. Remittances to Cuba from the U.S. amounted to $3 billion in 2016. That's according to the State Department. Washington also moved to restrict non-family travel after a broad loosening of so-called purposeful visits under Obama led to a soaring number of American trips for cultural and educational exchanges. Details on the restrictions were not immediately clear, but tourism is a key lifeline of hard currency for Cuba. Bolton called such visits veiled tourism. Bolton spoke hours after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced the new policy allowing lawsuits against foreign firms operating on properties Cuba seized from Americans after the 1959 revolution. The U.S. has enforced a trade embargo against Cuba since the early 1960s. Colin Laverty, president of the Cuba Educational Travel Association, said in a statement that the measures on remittances and travel threaten the economic survival of Cuban families and the viability of thousands of independent small businesses allowed to operate since 2010 under reforms implemented by the former president, Raul Castro. Laverty said the only winners here are a handful of members of Congress and those stuck in the past that support them. The losers are millions of Cubans on and off the island and the overwhelming majority of Americans that support engagement with Cuba. Pompeo's decision on allowing lawsuits lets Americans, including Cubans, who become naturalized citizens years after the fact, sue companies that operate out of hotels, tobacco factories, distilleries, and other properties nationalized in Cuba after Fidel Castro took power in 1959. Pompeo said he would not renew a bar on litigation that has been placed in place for two decades, meaning that lawsuits can now be filed starting May 2nd, that's next week, when the current suspension expires. The Justice Department has certified roughly 6,000 claims as having merit. According to Kimberly Breyer, the top U.S. diplomat for the Americas, those claims have an estimated value of $8 billion, $2 billion in property, and $6 billion in interest, according to Breyer. Another 200,000 uncertified Cuban claims could run into the tens of billions of dollars, according to Breyer. Here to talk about this is one of the local experts on Cuba, Al Fox. Al Fox is the founder of a group called the Alliance for a Responsible Cuba Policy. And Al, welcome back to the airwaves here at MNF. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Rob. Nice for having me.
So tell me, what's your take on what the Trump administration announced about Cuba last week?
Well, it's not an act of war. It's short of an act of war against Cuba. That's how Cuba's taking it. I mean, it is one of the worst foreign policy blunders, certainly in my lifetime. It makes absolutely no sense. It defies logic. The greatness of America does not come through in any way, shape, or form. The policy, in my opinion, is immoral. The purpose of the strategy is to make the people on the island of Cuba suffer, take everything away from them, and the more they suffer, they'll get to a point where they'll rise up and overthrow the Cuban government.
And what's the likelihood of that, do you think?
The likelihood of that is zero and zero again. If for almost 60 years we've had that same policy in place, and it's not happened and it's not going to happen. And when the Soviet Union went belly up in 1991, April of 91, overnight all of Cuba's goods and services were cut 85-90%. They were that dependent on the former Soviet Union. And for the next 6-7 years, with Cubans referred to it as a special period. I mean, there was no toilet paper, no tooth, no heating oil, no cooking oil. I mean, it was immoral, and we did nothing to help then. But the point is, if the Cuban people didn't rise up then, they're not rising up now. And something else that most people don't take into account is that with one or two exceptions, the people that run Cuba today in the Cuban government and the masses in Cuba, they were born after the revolution. The only thing they know, as the Cuban ambassador has said and as the president of Cuba has said, the only thing we know is the blockade, is the embargo. We've lived under it. So tighten it, do whatever you want to do. We're not going anywhere. But this time might be a little bit different because of what's happening in Venezuela. And it's also a foreign policy blunder. I don't know why our great countries repeatedly sticking their nose into Venezuela. And the answer to many is that in the past, we had great relationships with the presidents of Venezuela, and they did pretty much what we, the United States, wanted them to do. Now you have a crowd that doesn't want to do what we tell them to do. And so, of course, we want to remove that government as well. But we're making the argument that the Cuban military is propping up the government of Venezuela. I mean, that just defies logic that a poor third world country is propping up militarily a first world country like Venezuela. But it makes a great propaganda story.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me about the remittances. Right now, how much can Cuban families send to Cuban families who live here in the U.S., how much can they send back to their relatives in Cuba? And how does limiting the remittances to $1,000 per person per quarter, how does that affect the people on the island?
Well, it affects them tremendously, and that's also one of some of the hypocrisies of this issue. And President Bush, the son, had some similar type policy, but President Obama, the Obama administration, changed that to, as you pointed out, you know, $1,000 per quarter per person. But if you're used to sending $500 a month or $1,000 a month to your family there, then that's going to be a big cut. On top of that, Americans could send money to Cuba. We have people right here in Tampa that went to Cuba and helped put on an addition into a home, gave them money, and all that immediately cut off as well. So if you're a Cuban and you believed in the American policy that things were heading in the right direction, so you invested your money to at a restaurant in your home or build an addition in your home or turn it into a bed and breakfast, well, you just lost that money overnight. It's gone instantly. As I said, I just think that the policy is immoral. It's designed to make people suffer. And we're the only country in the world, that supports that policy.
So what is this going to do to all the travel? I mean, out of Tampa International Airport, there's all these flights going directly to Cuba. A lot of people who, even some people who are listening right now, may have traveled to Cuba on one of those flights. What does this new policy do to all that travel that's going on between the U.S. and Havana?
Well, ultimately, it's going to, it'll start diminishing slowly. But there's a lot of rumors and talk that our government, I mean, John Bolton and Pompeo, they didn't do this in a vacuum. They've been working on this for 2 years. They've gone to our allies around the world and say, you're not going to like it, but we'll help you in this other area. You might get more foreign aid. And so if you're the president of Southwest Airlines and the United States government comes to you and says, you know, you've been trying to do this or that or some tax benefits or the United States, don't fight me too much on these flights to Cuba. We're going to help you there with a wink and a nod. That's also immoral, you know. I mean, the cruise lines, they put a lot of money. Now, the Cuban government, and they were really never that excited about these cruise ships coming there because it cost them a lot of money to build their infrastructure. So the ships now dock, the people get off, run around, and that was, again, the hypocrisy of the issue. I mean, what do you do but on a cruise but act like a tourist? So when they would land in Havana, supposedly they were not to do any tourist activities. And again, it's the only country in the world that Americans cannot travel to. The only country in the world. every American, the city of Tampa can get a load up an airplane and then go to North Korea. They can go to Iran. They can go to Yemen. Now, when they get to North Korea, the North Koreans might not let them in, okay? But they can go. Where here, the United States government that puts these restrictions.
Just simple tourism is not legal between American citizens and Cuba.
It's against the law.
Yeah. I didn't get your point, though, when you said that with a wink and a nod, the Trump administration is talking to airlines that fly to Cuba. What did you mean by that?
Well, if the airlines, you haven't heard them screaming and yelling and say, how can you do this? You're
That's
changing
true.
The rules on the game. On.
Yeah, yeah.
You've not heard the cruise line industry saying, what the hell are you all doing here? You know, we were encouraged to do this. We invested our money. Everybody was fine, happy. Americans were happy. Cubans were happy. The government was happy. And now you just put in these insane policies that if Americans, when they land in Havana in their ships, and they can't get off the ship, then why are we going to land in Havana? So you have not heard any of that hue and cry. So what that says, having spent 41 years in Washington, is that there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes and certainly above our pay grade.
Hmm. You spent 41 years in Washington mostly as a lobbyist, and then you returned to Tampa about 10 years ago. Did you come back to Tampa?
I spent a lot of my career, and I worked in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives in senior positions. And then I formed a lobbying company, and then I represented some major corporations and returned to Tampa in 2006 to run for Congress solely on the issue of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
To try to bring some sanity, because I strongly believe that this policy is not going to change from the top down. I don't care how many senators or congressmen go. This policy is going to change from the bottom up. When the people of Tampa rise up and tell their elected officials, Republicans and Democrats, a lot of people think this is a Republican issue, but it is not. Nancy Pelosi, this very moment, can make an announcement to say that tomorrow at noon, we're going to have a five-hour debate on the repeal of the Helms-Burton Bill, the legislation that codifies all these insane policies. And we're going to have 5 hours of debate to be equally divided between the Republicans and the Democrats. And at 5 noon, we're going to have a vote to repeal it or to keep it in place. Rob, there are 435 members of the Congress of the United States. If they were faced with a choice to repeal Helms-Burton, 380, 390 would vote to repeal it.
Why would they do that?
Because it's the right thing to do, number one, believe it or not, and this is America's interest. But you say, well, Al, if it's that simple, then why doesn't it happen? It doesn't happen because Nancy Pelosi has in her caucus about 10 or 11 extremists on Cuba. I mean, these people have a close to a Nazi mentality. They want to overthrow the Cuban government. That's the only thing they care about. That's the only thing they do in Congress. And so Nancy Pelosi says, you vote for me for Speaker, and I'll protect you on that issue.
So these are some South Florida Democrats that want a hard line against Cuba.
Oh, yeah, but there's a handful of New Jersey Democrats. Yeah.
We're talking with Al Fox. He is the founder of a group called the Alliance for a Responsible Cuba Policy. We're talking about the announcement last week by the Trump administration of some major crackdowns on Cuba. And if you've got a comment, you can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. You can also call us up at 813-239-9663. One of the other things that happened last week was that there was an announcement that the Trump administration, under Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, would allow lawsuits against foreign firms operating on properties that Cuba seized from Americans after the 59 Revolution. They would allow these lawsuits to go forward. There's been a block for the last 20 years on those lawsuits. What's your take on how that would affect the island?
Well, it's not going to affect the island in any way, shape, or form because not one of those lawsuits are going to win. I mean, that is what's so laughable about this. It was the Democrats that gave us Helms-Burton Bill. It was Bill Clinton that signed Helms-Burton Bill. And people were just shocked. I mean, the Republican president wouldn't sign that legislation. But Bill Clinton wanted to pander to a handful of people in Miami. That's the insanity of this policy. So what did it mean? It said that if you were a Cuban citizen and owned a business in Cuba and came to America after the revolution, became an American citizen, then you could sue the Cuban government for your property if it had been nationalized, confiscated, or abandoned. And those are three different categories, believe me. You could sue as an American citizen. How does anyone logically believe, including the world court, the international community, the Cuban government is never going to pay a penny of that, ever? It's just not. And so it is something that has done nothing more than to pander to make a handful of people happy in America, and a handful of people that are driven by vengeance and pride should never set American foreign policy.
Might it scare out investors, like investors from Italy,
sure,
and Canada and Spain? And
there's no question about that. Yeah. And of course, that's what it's one of the things that it's designed to do. Now, there are some countries like Canada, part of the Helms-Burton Bill, this happened over 10 years ago, that said that if you continue to do business in Cuba, your executives can never travel to the United States. And the executives of some major Canadian companies said, well, that's okay. We just won't go to the United States.
Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I'm Rob Lori. Al Fox is my guest today. We're talking about the crackdown by the Trump administration on Cuba. So you said when we started this interview that this is about as close as it comes to an act of war. Why did you say that?
Well, the people of Cuba and the government of Cuba, that's what they believe. They said this is, I mean, the policy, it makes no sense. There's no logic to it. For example, in the past 2 years, something that's the only one of its kind, and that is that there's a memorandum of understanding between the Havana Aquarium and our Florida Aquarium right here in Tampa. It was a major, major breakthrough for marine biologists from both countries to get together and try to study and answer the question, why are Florida's coral reefs dying? And why are Cuba's coral reefs flourishing? Cuba said, we really would like to know why yours are dying. And we'd like to know why ours are flourishing. And so a memorandum of understanding to many people did some work, and I'm very proud to have participated in that process. The late Tom Stork from the Florida Aquarium and Tom Hall here locally played a significant role in writing this memorandum of understanding that would allow marine biologists from both aquariums to exchange ideas and to meet. And they've come here 4 or 5 times. Marine biologists from our aquarium here have gone to Cuba. Everybody was delighted. The environmental community was delighted in that area. This has helped Florida's territorial waters. Well, under this new policy, that would be negated. You can't do that.
Mm. There was also an agreement, and I think it was with the University of Buffalo, perhaps. There was a medical school up there that was getting this what appeared to be a promising anti-lung cancer drug from Cuba. And there was some research that was to be started on that. What happens to medical research where Cuba has developed drugs? And
if you implement these provisions, as it reads, you can't do that. You know, but Cuba, 2 months ago, a freak of nature, a massive tornado hit the city of Havana. 13 people died. Thousands were homeless. Hundreds and hundreds of homes were just destroyed. And the greatest country in the world, the greatest democracy in the world, the United States, does not even acknowledge that event. No assistance to help or what have you. And every single time that the United States has had a tragic event, whether it was Katrina or 9/11, one of the first countries to offer their help, their doctors, because they don't have material goods as such, is Cuba.
Would you expect, if these remittances are stopped, and also if you've got these other restrictions on Cuba, would you expect more people to try to leave Cuba by boat to try to come here to the U.S., as was done a lot in the 1980s?
Of course, and that's one of the motivating factors of this policy. They want someone to get in a raft and seaworthy, and the sharks eat them, because that makes a great story of where they're fleeing. But very few people understand the import of what you just said, Rob. The real question is, why more people don't leave Cuba? That's the real question. They only got to come 90 miles. And all they do is get here, touch our soil. They get all sorts of benefits that no other country in the world gets.
Is the Cuban Adjustment Act still in effect?
Yes.
What benefits do they get when well, these refugees come here from
now,
Cuba?
The refugee is not, you know, they come here for economic reasons. They're not fleeing oppression. But when they come to America, all they got to say, I'm a Cuban and I'm fleeing oppression. And you're granted asylum. Prior to the Wetfoot, what they're trying to bring it back, this Wetfoot Dryfoot policy, which said all you got to do is touch American soil, and you got $300 a month, food stamps, health care benefits, aid to education, and small business loan. You come from Haiti, Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and touch American soil and get caught, you're immediately deported. You tell the people of Mexico that tomorrow at noon, the same immigration policy that applies to Cuba will apply to a Mexican. Let me tell you what's going to happen at 11:45 a.m. The entire country would line up on the border, ready, set, go, and run
across. And so for a country like Honduras, where there's criminal gangs on the street and things are out of control, they would all come here if we gave them the kind of aid that we give the Cubans.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Since 1776, this is the only time this has ever been done. What happened? 1959, some very rich Batistites, supporters of the Batista government, came to America. They gave American politicians money to write special laws that apply just to them. It is the exact same playbook that's happened in Venezuela.
So, you know, it's not discussed much. When we discuss those refugees from Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala, the folks that are lining up on the border in South Texas and California, it's often not discussed. In fact, it's never discussed that Cuban refugees get this higher level of treatment, this free stuff.
Sure. Well, it's not discussed because if the American people really understood 50% of this policy, they would rise up. And the media does a horrible, horrible job in reporting this for that very reason. I mean, when you get a weather report, and we so-called have diplomatic relations, they don't give you the temperature in Cuba.
Yeah, never in Havana. Well, right. We're talking about Cuba. We're talking about the crackdown on Cuba. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Al Fox is our guest. He is the founder of a group called the Alliance for a Responsible Cuba Policy. He's been a longtime Cuba watcher. How many times have you been to Cuba?
Oh, over 119 years.
So if the Trump administration says it's concerned about the form of government there and the poor economy, would you agree that the Cuba economy is struggling? And how much responsibility should the U.S. take for its embargo on the struggling economy in Cuba?
All of it. I mean,
but you don't think that they haven't figured out how to run their government run their country?
Sure, and they'll always find someone willing to help them. And you look at, we say that does Cuba have a system of government that needs improvement in the area of some human rights, in the area of freedom of the press? Yes, they do, but so does Saudi Arabia, so does China, and I found it as someone who grew up in the Vietnam era and participated in all these marches in Washington. At one time, I was a huge supporter of the war in Vietnam. But through education and through colleges, they educated the American people, and we now see that was in a blunder. But to see the President of the United States 2 weeks ago go to Hanoi to meet with the President of North Korea, but yet is strangling Cuba, to me, defies logic. Vietnam killed 68,000 Americans, maimed and crippled hundreds of thousands that are paraplegics and quadriplegic, and they're now our major trading partner. And the president picked Hanoi to show the president of North Korea, look what can happen if you bring in a little capitalism. Well, shouldn't that apply to Cuba as well?
So is it the power of the Cuba lobby, all these rich folks that came over from Cuba that control politics in Miami, that is that what's doing this?
Sure. I mean, there's no question about it. And you hear Marco Rubio and Senator Nelson used to say, and Rick Scott, I stand with the people of Cuba. We want to bring freedom to that island. That's what they want. Well, when you go to Cuba, you ask them what they think of Senator Nelson and Marco Rubio and Rick Scott.
What do they say?
They think they're out of touch with reality. Out of touch with reality. You won't find one person on the island of Cuba that respects and admires Marco Rubio. Not one. Forget the Cuban government. I'm talking about waiters and cab drivers.
This issue came up a couple of weeks ago when I was talking to Greg Palast about Venezuela. He said one of the reasons that people still support President Maduro in Venezuela is that a lot of the population is Indian, mestizo, and non-European. Only 22% of the population in Venezuela is European. Okay. Did the Castro Revolution, did that empower people of color on that island?
Well, yes, and that's one of the reasons that we're having the problem in Venezuela. Venezuela, everybody praises what a great country. But it was a country of haves and have not. It was a very rich country for the rich, okay? But the masses had nothing. And one of the things that the Cuban government did in 1950, that it took the masses that were uneducated and poor healthcare system and raised them all up 4 or 5 levels. Now, they didn't raise them up to our level. So today, that poor third world country, Cuba's the most literate society in the Western Hemisphere. Think of that. Cuba's infant mortality rate and life expectancy is just like ours. You know what it is in Haiti, Honduras, Guatemala? Way below those numbers.
Probably 40 or 50 years old. Yeah.
But all the work that I'm doing, it's not to help the people of Cuba. That's their problem. My problem is to help the people in America. What makes America different than any other country in the world is our certain basic freedoms, and one of them is the right to travel. And so that's how I got started in this thing. I mean, I could not understand how my great country can say, you can go to North Korea, okay, and Yemen, but you cannot go to Cuba.
Let's take a few phone calls. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We're talking about the Trump administration's crackdown last week on Cuba. And let's go to Dan in St. Petersburg. Dan, you're on the air with Al Fox.
Hey, I wanted to see if I can get a little more understanding when you said that they're not leaving Cuba because of the oppression, but they're coming here because of the economic opportunities. I think the oppression is the lack of economic active opportunities there. So, take that.
No, I agree with you. They're coming here for economic opportunities. The same reason that everybody's trying to cross the border there.
Well, wouldn't that be considered oppression there, though? If they don't have any economic, that is, they're leaving because of oppression.
Well, do you hold that same standard for Mexico and Guatemala and Haiti and Colombia? Because they're coming here for economic reasons.
Yes,
okay.
That's true. But, I mean, the oppression in Cuba is what's driving people here because they have no money, man.
Well, I disagree with your premise. They don't have money. They don't have a lifestyle, okay? But the point I was making, because of the proximity that they're so close, if there is that much oppression in Cuba, why more Cubans don't leave the island?
Because they don't have to work. They can just hang out and just read books and stuff.
How many times have you been to Cuba?
None.
Okay. Well, then you ought to go, and you will see that Cuba, they have a very strong work ethic. They don't just hang out. They make do. They're very industrious people. They've kept those cars from the 1950s working. I've taken maybe 500 cell phones 10 years ago that don't work here in America, and they would take them apart, and somehow they would make them work. They're very industrious people. But again, don't confuse my main point here. What goes on in Cuba is really of no importance other than, is it a threat to the security of the United States? If a country is a threat to the security of the United States, then I want my country involved. But if it is not, doesn't make any difference to me who the leaders in that country are. It could be Donald Duck, for all I care.
All right, Dan. Go ahead, Dan. Last point.
But we just don't want to support communism.
We don't? Well, what are we supporting in Vietnam? What are we supporting in China?
All right. Dan, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments. 813-239-9663. Al Fox is here with the Alliance for a Responsible Cuba Policy. And what's left out, too, is that if Cubans are coming here from Cuba mm-hmm. and getting these free benefits that Hondurans or Mexicans or Guatemalans don't get, there's that added incentive, too, if they're getting $300 bucks a month.
I know several, personally, three individuals that came here in the early 40s from Cuba. And within six, seven, 8 months, they had a nervous breakdown. And so now they're on full disability to take our tax dollars to pay them a check every month. I think that's wrong.
They came here in the early 40s?
No, they came in their
They were young. They were young. I got you. Let's go to John in St. Pete. John, you're on the air. We're talking about Cuba.
Hey, Rob and Al. I'm enjoying your conversation. I have a curious question. I'm wondering why, since there's such an antagonism between the two countries, that the Cubans don't invite the Chinese to have a warm water port. Trading with the Chinese, because the Chinese got everything you want.
that's a good question. What most people don't know is that China has to be a little careful what they do in Cuba, as does any other country, because one of the laws of the United States is we put pressure on all countries in the world that do business with Cuba. I mean, Cuba, theoretically, Cuba doesn't need the United States for anything because they can do business with anyone that they want to. However, the United States puts pressure on those countries. Don't do an oil venture with Cuba to drill for oil because we'll cut your foreign aid here or there.
China pretty much owns us. I mean,
let me ask it this way. If China sends a shipment of shoes through the Panama Canal, and they it's on a big boat, and that boat stops in Cuba and gets rid of half the shoes in Cuba and drops them off for the Cuban people, can that boat then come to dock in New Orleans or any American port?
Yeah, they used to. They recently changed. That's one of the last things that Obama did. However, so what the United States does now is put pressure. And that what you're alluding to, Rob, is also immoral to say to every country in the world that if your ship enters a harbor in Cuba, you cannot enter a U.S. port for 6 months. Well, what does that do? That drives the price of that product that they were taking up.
Is that still in effect?
In a limited kind of way, what they go around it now by not even letting the ship come there in the first place by putting pressure on all these countries in the world, you know.
But could you imagine if they put that same policy towards China? It would cripple the United States the second they did that.
Yes.
The Port of Los Angeles was shut down.
Exactly.
People would be screaming, where are my $5 tennis shoes?
You got it. Yeah. That's right.
John, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. Yeah. And we are talking about Cuba. Adam writes this email. He says, how are they going to stop the remittances? Will it be on the businesses, writes Adam. Some say someone goes to Western Union and wants to send money to the relative. Will Western Union limit the remittances?
Sure. And they have to report everything. I mean, if you go to Western Union and say, here's $5,000, I want to send it to you. No, you can't do that. Because the Office of Foreign Assets Control, which is a division of the Treasury Department, they monitor this thing very closely. That's not going to be that different. Now, when you fly to Cuba, you know, and you take $5,000 cash in your pocket, and then you go visit your family or something, that's going to be somewhat hard to monitor. However, if you get caught, you've got a big problem. And so it's just not, it's going to be not worth it.
The Treasury Department in the past has really gone after some people, including you.
Yeah, because people report, you know, I call them cockroaches. They report to you to the Treasury Department. I understand that Rob Lohr, I went to Cuba 3 times in the past 8 months. Check him out. I know he's going there just to play and to whore around. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you, because philosophically, the people that manage that division of the Treasury Department are all anti-Cuba. And people say, well, how can that be? Well, let me tell you how it can be. The Treasury Department is on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. The Office of Foreign Assets Control's department that monitors Cuba is in Brickell Avenue in Miami, in a federal building. And you can't work in that building unless you're anti-Cuba.
Let's go to Dave in North Tampa. Dave, you have a question for Al Fox?
I just wanted to compliment him for bringing forth a better understanding of situations. And I wanted to mention how funny or odd I thought it was that I was standing with an Occupy ICE little demonstration down in Ybor a couple months ago in front of the Customs Border Patrol building. And we were there about the children in cages and migration from Mexico. But it just struck me odd that as we were marching to our little location, I passed people sitting there smoking their stogies, making faces at us. And I'm standing on a street that was built by Cubans for Cubans with a tequila bar across the street. And there was a brick in the sidewalk that I noticed that said Martinez. And I'm standing there protesting for the right of immigrants to come to the country.
Well, thank you for your kind remarks. And I thank you for that demonstration. I was familiar with it. I was there, not participating, but happened to be there. I was one of the guys smoking a stogie on the on the side of the sidewalk.
we'll smile and say, give us a peace sign the next time.
Right.
Well, Dave, thanks a lot. You know, Al, that, I don't know about your family, but you, your family's been here for a while.
Yeah.
A lot of people came to Ybor City from Spain, from Cuba, from Italy. They were former cigar workers on the island of Cuba, and they came here in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
They just came over. They did not immigrate. They didn't sign up for a visa or anything. They just came when the cigar industry moved here.
Yeah, they did. And my mother was born in Cuba, and her mother, my grandmother, was from Zaragoza, Spain, and was an opera singer, and performing in Cuba was where my mom did. My last name is Fox, but it's an Italian name. My father's family is from Naples, Italy. So I'm a mixture of a lot of different things. But the boom, particularly in the 1910-1920, in the tobacco industry, as Tampa grew, it was all cigar factories here and in West Tampa, and they needed these workers and these rollers, and so it was a great job. They originally were going to do all this in Key West, but for a couple of different reasons, the weather and
they had labor trouble in Cuba, rather
labor strikes, and so they came here and they assimilated and. The cigar industry was, well, Tampa was the largest producer of cigars in the world up until maybe the
50s. But the irony is that a lot of Tampa was built by immigrants who came here without papers and with the names like Martinez.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but most of the people that came from Europe, they came through Ellis Island. And so they did have papers. And the Cubans, they were... You know, you could leave Cuba and go back. One of the other things that President Trump has done that, again, I think is immoral, the United States would grant what they called a 5-year visa, where you lived in Cuba and you were an artist or a medical doctor, and they weren't a lot of them, but they were a good number, I guess, where the United States government would give you a 5-year visa to travel freely, to come back and forth from Cuba to the United States, go lecture at Harvard or what have you, and some private Cuban citizens had. I personally know a lady that works at the National Hotel, and so she got it. 5 years was up. She applied for another one. She got it. She's had it for 10 years. Her third 5-year visa is up in the next few months, and she has her daughter and grandchildren in this country. So she comes to visit them, and she told me 4 months ago, I don't want to defect. I don't want to leave Cuba, but I'm going to because I'm getting older and I want to see my grandchildren and my daughter. That's immoral. So what did they do? They changed the policy from multiple visits for 5 years to one visit in 3 months. Again, designed to anger, to frustrate, to get the Cuban people.
Here's an email from John. John says, can your guest please explain to me how a person in the U.S. can sue the Cuban government? I never really understood how this would work. How could somebody in the U.S. sue the Cuban government? And he goes on to add, do we have a treaty with Cuba that permits such lawsuits?
No, there is no
treaty.
We don't even have an extradition treaty because we won't give it an extradition treaty. Cuba will give us one tomorrow. The answer is, the $64,000 question, because everybody laughs at it. The International Committee, the International Lawyers Committee, the World Trade Organization. Now, they can file the lawsuit and say, Fidel Castro owes me, $8 million, $8 billion, $8 trillion. The response to that is going to be, make it $100 trillion. Where are you going to get the money? How are you going to get paid? And part of that is by the United States hoping that it scares foreign investors to go there. To do what? Put misery and squeeze the people of Cuba.
You said that Cuba would give us an extradition treaty tomorrow. I mean, the complaint always is that there are people like Joanne Chesimard, who is wanted in this country.
Right.
She's living in Cuba right now. She killed a police officer. The complaint is, Cuba won't extradite her. But you're saying that Cuba, if we negotiate with them, would give us an extradition
treaty? But not retroactive. And the Joanne Chesimard case, she was in a shootout on a highway in New Jersey, and a policeman was killed. It wasn't... It's her, but she fled the United justice system in the United States. That is true, but there was no extradition treaty. Okay, now we have Cubans. One just died recently, Luis Rosado Carrillo. He planted a bomb on a civilian Cuban airline that exploded and killed everybody on board. Okay.
And Cuba asked that he be extradited from the U.S. to Cuba, and we never sent him back.
Cuba said. He was found guilty of that charge in Venezuela because he put the bomb on a civilian Cuban airliner that killed everybody on board. And you ought to listen to the audio tape of that pilot when he's screaming, there's been an explosion on board. We're descending rapidly. There's been an explosion on board. And so they caught Luis Rosado. So he was in jail in Cuba. In the last days of the Reagan administration, the United States ambassador, a man named Otto Reich, to Cuba, who is an extremist on this issue, somehow long complicated, but a miracle happens, and Luis Rosado Carrillo, the jail was left open, and he escaped. He lived on the scam for a long time, and he's a convicted international terrorist that the United States would not even give him entry in the United States. But one day he showed up in Miami 10, 12 years ago. Just showed up. There he was. And it was a huge embarrassment for the United States. But what happened? They put him in detention for about a year or so, took him to El Paso, Texas, and then released him and charged him with illegal entry in the United States, and he lived happily ever after in Cuba. They gave him a parade in Cuba. Well, the Cuban...
In Miami.
In Miami.
Yeah.
The Cuban government's position was, we get it, you don't want to send him back to us, but you have an extradition treaty with Venezuela. Venezuela is asking you send them back here. But the argument went that the United States was not going to send them to Venezuela because Venezuela then would give them to Cuba. And the Venezuelan government said, no, he escaped from our jails. His ass is going back to jail here, you know. So, and Rob, that's a good point, that the extremists in the Cuban locally and in the United States, they point to a joint Chesimard. Is that a reason to keep our two countries apart forever?
Let's go to Sylvia, who says she just returned from visiting Cuba. Sylvia, you're on the air with Joe Fox, and this is WMNF. What's your question?
Al Fox.
Terrific. Yes, Al, thank you. Really appreciate it. I just came back 2 days ago, and before I ask a question, I just want to tell you that we had a wonderful time. My husband and I went on a people-to-people educational tour all over the country. We learned so much, and it's such a beautiful country, and we met so many talented young people, enterprising, ambitious artists, musicians, chefs that are, opening up parlor doors in their homes, and poets, writers. We went to an organic farm. Just some wonderful things going on, and then, of course, the entrepreneurs that are running those taxi cars with the plastic cars. There's so much that country can offer. And I think we really need to end this U.S. embargo. They need our money and tourism so badly. There's such a crumbling infrastructure. The streets were, wobbly. We saw sides of buildings that just looked like they were going to come down any minute, and people living in those buildings, they so much need our help. And I don't really understand why our government is holding on to this embargo for 60 years now, and I think Marco Rubio is really involved in this. I don't understand why he doesn't want to let go of this embargo and help the people and move forward. And before you answer that question, I just want to tell you that China, I heard you say something about China. They are building malls and hotels there. We saw it, that they are very involved in building. So, okay.
Let me go in reverse just to touch the China thing first. If the president of Cuba called China and said, give me $10 billion right this minute, and you can take over this place, China would do it in a minute. The Cuban government does not want to be ever again 80, 90% dependent. In 1959, when we cut them off completely, they lost all their goods and services, and they were going to suffer. They found a sugar daddy in the Soviet Union, and they went belly up in 1991, and then they found almost a good sugar daddy in Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. But the Cuban government themselves are never going to be dependent. And they have suffered more than any other country has suffered by being dependent. So they've learned their lesson. So they want to kind of pick and choose in their investments. So some of the investments that you saw there in China, yes, they're happening. But just like Putin would love to go back to Cuba. Well, he did. Regarding Marco Rubio, Marco Rubio is a creation of the right-wing extremist Cubans in this country. When he was 15 years old, he volunteered in the Bob Dole campaign for president. And these extremists pick them out. They're very, very good. I will give them credit for that. They know how to keep a farm team going. But the motivation has nothing to do with human rights violation, communism, political prisoners. Yeah. The motivation for this insane policy is hatred, vengeance, and retribution. Gloria Estefan's father, for example. Gloria Estefan sings songs about freedom and democracy, and she would love to go back to the homeland and all that. Yeah. Gloria Estefan is not welcome in Cuba. Gloria Estefan's father was chief of security for Fulgencio Batista. Gloria Estefan's father participated in the execution of 20,000 Cuban citizens up against the wall, bang, you're dead, from 1953 to 1958. When Batista fled Cuba on New Year's Eve, 1958, Gloria Estefan's father was on the plane with him. Okay? So, for me, Albert Fox, that's fine, but it's not personal. It is personal for that family. The congressman from South Florida, Mario Lincoln Diaz Ballard, his father was one of Fidel Castro's best friends growing up. Fidel Castro married his first wife, Mirta Diaz Ballard, is the aunt to the United States congressman from Miami. You say, well, Al, what's the point? The point is that there's a hatred in that family. It's like the Hatfield and the McCoys. And I don't have a dog in that fight, and I don't think you have a dog in that fight. But what should be the determining factor is what is best for America, not what is best for one side or the other of that family. And that's the tragedy of this. All our political leaders, Republicans and Democrats, share equally in this, because it doesn't make any difference if we've had a Democratic president or Republican president, Democratic House or Senate.
All right. Sylvia, thanks a lot. Thanks for giving us your account of the trip. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Very much. Okay.
Bye-bye. Al, I wish we had more time. Thanks a lot for coming by WMNF. Can people go to your website and find out more?
ResponsibleCubaPolicy.org.
Okay. That's Al Fox, who is the founder of the Alliance for a Responsible Cuba Policy. Al, thanks for coming by WMNF.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for a discussion about Holocaust Remembrance Day on the Midpoint program. Thanks to Bill Grace. He's been our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF Tampa. And right now, we're going to go up to Washington, D.C. and get the latest news from NPR. Then, right after that, we'll hear the Midpoint program in 5 minutes and then executive session at 1 o'clock today. You're listening to your community radio station, WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. And here's the latest news from National Public Radio.